You are listening to the Midlife with Courage podcast. This is where women in midlife come for inspiration, motivation, and sometimes a little education to help them flourish after 40. Let's get started. Hello and welcome back to Midlife with Courage. I am Kim Benoit, your host. Today, I have a wonderful guest with me. Her name is Maria Toso. Welcome to the podcast, Maria.
Thank you so much, Kim. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, today we're going to talk about triggers, emotional triggers, and how to heal them. And I'm so interested in this. I can't wait to jump in. But before we do that, why don't you just tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm a Danish immigrant. I came to this country, what, 28 years ago now? And just as the guy across the street started blowing the snow, I remember coming here and I heard it as mowing the snow. So I was like, we got to go mow the snow.
Oh
So that was
no.
a big laugh. My dad died when I was only 16 years old. And that was really what started me on my spiritual path in many ways because I could feel him on the other side. I didn't know where to go with that. So I met a meditation teacher in Copenhagen a few years after he died. And it was Buddhist meditation. And one of the first things this teacher said to me was, everything that is unprocessed in your chitta, heart, mind, so that means in your whole constitution, will be projected out and you will attract the exact person or situation that will show you where something is not flowing, where life force is not flowing, where there is a knot. So that's pretty much what we today would call an emotional trigger. We didn't have that language back then. So the idea that I had something to do with somebody, not being kind to me was a radically new way of looking at it. And so it's really evolved since then. But I would say it's really in the last 10 years when I really started teaching yoga teacher training here in Minnesota that I started noticing that the hardest part for my students, it really wasn't learning Sanskrit or memorizing things or even standing in front of a group and teaching and guiding, although that, that will trigger certain fears. But it was sitting in meditation and just being with yourself, with your breath, and with your body. And it's like, well, I've had that difficulty myself in my meditation practice, but now I got to see that hundreds of women have that difficulty. And I say women because it's mostly women that take my yoga teacher training. So I'm going to speak mostly about women today. And I started then applying more deeply the methods that I learned through yoga, a method of really being with what was contracted instead of escaping. And one of my first yoga teacher training students at St. Paul College almost 10 years ago, she said, I hate meditating. All I want to do when I sit down and meditate is go watch Netflix. So that was an expression we used in the classroom. What's your Netflixing? And that's what you in the book will see described as your numbing out.
Numbing out. Yes.
So I talk about that in the book, how we all tend to not want to go in and feel what's in there. We tend to either numb out, lash out, or check out.
Yeah.
And the Netflix would be in the numbing out category.
Numbing out. You mentioned the book is called Heal What Hurts. The people who are listening, I'm holding it up here. And I love that the three different ways you deal is numbing out, lashing out, or checking out. I've read the book and you mentioned that writing the book was the most intense, difficult, and transformative journey of your life. Tell us about that.
Well, I think that when it comes to triggers, there's a lot of shame around it. I think when we act in a triggered way, we kind of know we're under a lot of control. It's something much younger that's acting out. So some part of us wants to defend that, justify that, but deep inside we kind of know we're not coming from our highest self. So instead of going in and recognizing, well, we're coming from a very tender, vulnerable place that really need to be held, we tend to kind of push that down. And I, along with everyone else I've worked with, did a lot of that. And especially since becoming a yoga teacher, then it's like you have a certain role as a yoga teacher that has attained some degree of mastery over your triggers, and yet they would still arise. And to this day, they still do. And that would be a message I would really want to convey today is triggers don't heal in the sense that they just go away and you're never going to be triggered. They heal in the sense that you continuously unconditionally bring loving presence to them whenever they arise. And then you actually stop wanting to do the numbing out, lashing out, and checking out. And every time you feel a trigger arise inside the body, and we'll talk more about how that shows up as a contraction somewhere in the body. It's with the same enthusiasm that you would hopefully have most of the time toward a child crying. It's like, oh, I'm gonna go hold her. I'm gonna go be with her. I need to be with this,
You need to take
right?
care of
Just as
it.
you wouldn't go into a crying baby in a dark room who woke up and is needing to be held and hand them a lollipop or give them an iPhone or say, well, why don't you just watch this movie? We want love when we're scared and contracted across the board. That is the healer. And any numbing agent we might choose and have shame around is a substitute for love.
Sure. In so many things I've been learning, we need to start with ourselves and taking care of ourselves first.
Yeah.
So this is just one other example. Why don't we first just take a little step back and talk about what a trigger is? Because the way I see it is, especially we're recording this before the holidays, there's a lot of triggers for me during the holiday season. Triggers are they can be people and situations, correct?
So, actually, what comes to mind when you say this is Ram Dass, the spiritual teacher, he once said, "You think you're enlightened? Go spend the holidays with your family." So, the way I talk about triggers is someone says something and something inside of you contracts. And all of a sudden, you have less access to your higher self, your more spirit-guided self, and you're thrown back into acting like exactly the age you were when that trigger was first put into place. So, say your big brother bullied you when you were 5 repeatedly, and it brought a lot of shame and fear around a certain tone of voice or something he could do. Well, now you go have dinner at the age of 50 with your brother, and all he has to do is talk in that tone and throw a couple of words at you, and all of a sudden you're reduced to a 5-year-old that has no power. And so, since all of these triggers, in my experience in working as a coach with clients and so much with myself, when we trace it back, your brother at 50 says something, you feel your heart clenching. If you manage not to lash out, don't talk to me this way, or numb out, give me another glass of wine, or check out, I'm just not feeling this, I'm going to be really cold and just analytical about it. If you manage to say, excuse me, I got to go to the bathroom, and sit with that triggered place and just stay with that. And you can't stay in the bathroom forever in the middle of your holiday dinner,
No.
but if you're able to sit with that for a moment, you'll very likely have memories around what it was like to be 5 in that dynamic. And if you, in that moment, to that triggered energy, can bring loving presence, it actually starts to relax a little bit. You might momentarily have sadness and fear because the triggers, in again, kind of my little own spiritual research here, they always make us feel not loved, not safe, like we don't belong. It tends to be a mix of that, or maybe one is stronger than the other. And if we can bring a lot of loving presence to that feeling of not feeling loved and safe and like you belong, it relaxes. And in that moment, you might be able to see, well, either your brother's deliberately saying the thing that he knows can kind of, goat you, or it's unconscious on his part, but whatever it is, it actually has nothing to do with you. And you're able to sort of come back and be more in touch with your higher self and bring that to the party, so to speak.
Sure. So let's talk about how you know if you're being triggered. It shows up in your body.
Yes, very
Yes.
much so. So the first two chapters in the book, they are all about becoming grounded in your body and being very aware of your breath. And
Yes.
the moment you draw your awareness to the act of breathing and your physical body, the mind slows down. So you actually become more present. And I think people have never been more anxious than they are right now. So there can be a real resistance to going into the body because then all of a sudden you feel what might be already sort of contracted in a semi-chronic way. But if you relax the body, and you end up deepening your breath as you move through the breath exercises, you end up more present in your body, then you'll catch the trigger sooner. Because from the moment you're triggered, and things contract. If you think of yourself as a vessel for your spirit, and now you contract, something has contracted and it kind of contracts the whole vessel and it's smaller. You now have less access to, and you're less of a container for higher self. You're going a little bit more into survival mode at this point. If you react from that place, again, you're going to react from that childlike place. If you don't catch it at that point, you might just be rolling with a dynamic, especially if you've had maybe something to drink or something that makes you a little bit less conscious and grounded in yourself. The dynamic is just going to take a predictable path, kind of a downward vortex, if you will. But if you can catch it the moment something is contracting in my heart, I'm feeling a lump in my throat, my stomach is in turmoil. If you can catch it at that point, that's when you're able to excuse yourself. I got to go to the bathroom, or I think I'm going to go for a walk and be right back. But if you don't catch it, then you get flooded by it, and chances are that your more habitual out will just run its course. You'll finish that bottle of wine or that, pint of ice cream, or just have it out with somebody. You should not be doing this. Try to fix it by changing someone else's behavior, which also in my little research has never worked.
It does not work. And that's kind of a theme throughout the book too, I think. I want to ask you about forgiveness later on, but yeah, this is something, as I said, the holidays, I know I'm going to be triggered probably by something or someone. You can, it sounds like you can think about this ahead of time and maybe work with that. And okay, I know when that person shows up, this is what's going to happen. So is that true? You can kind of work that out a little bit before.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ladies, I am so excited about my new venture in this podcast. I'm calling it Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. You are going to get me, Kim Benoy, once or twice a month. I'm going to be getting real with you about the conversations that I have with my guests. And I'm going a little bit deeper. I'm going to bring my own personal experiences into it. I'm going to share what I've got going on in the hopes that you will share right back with me. This is not going to be me just talking in front of the microphone. I want your input. I want your participation. If you go to my show notes at the end of this episode, you'll see a support the show. That is where you can subscribe to Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. For only $5 a month, you're going to get this extra bonus content once, twice a month, and we're going to talk about what's really happening in midlife. I'm going to share my experiences. I'm going to get real. I'll probably get a little vulnerable. I'll be sharing things I don't normally share. So please subscribe so that you can get in on the founding members of this new Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. I'll see you there.
Well, absolutely. And I would say not just before the holidays, but before stepping outside your door, or you don't even have to step outside your door before you have something come at you. Like a daily practice that might be the most foundational of being aware of your breath and being aware of your body, because then you can get into a relationship with your body where you might say, if you know you're going to spend time with family that will trigger you, do you talk to yourself? Talk to that part that is already contracted in the anticipation of these, interactions that you'll likely be having. Just, I'm here with you. I'm not leaving. I'm right here. I've got you. I love you. It's going to be okay. If your heart starts to feel scared or you contract, I'm going to be with you, and we're just going to remove ourselves from the situation, or I'm going to just stay right in you. So instead of the three out, you come in and you almost broaden in your field. And your broadcast is very different at that point, because you actually exude strength when you're fully present. And what you might actually see is, if you were to work with a trigger that you know is coming up beforehand, you might actually notice that the brother doesn't say the thing. And that's the kind of mystical part of it, that the very trigger that's already kind of laying there and awake and is almost maybe a little bit in the contracted mode already, is almost like a vacuum that draws in that very whatever the story that's contained in that trigger from childhood now draws that in. And if it isn't the brother because he's not coming, then it's the sister's new boyfriend will find kind of a stand-in for the original villain. But most of us have
Yeah.
some original villains from our, whoever raised us and who we were raised with.
Sure.
And we can move across the world. Trust me, I tried it. And still encounter the way my mom treated me in my husband, or the way a brother treated me in a colleague. So the method is the same. It's loving presence around the contracted place.
Yeah.
And that's body scanning. It's scanning the body, feeling the body. And then as you work with the book or in one of my groups or with me privately, you also become very aware of where is your primary trigger? Where does that sit? Okay, it's in the stomach or it's in the heart. And you bring awareness to, bring awareness to, bring awareness to it. So you'll get to the point where even the smallest little early flutter of a contraction, you can already feel that. And you can feel, this is how we talk about the numbing agents. You start to become aware when I have this contracted feeling, I want sugar. I want my phone. I want to scroll. I want a cocktail. I want a cookie, whatever it is, and we tend to have shame around whatever that is. But if we can say that's an indication, like my hand is already on the pint of ice cream, can I take 1 minute to just be with what's really going on, sweetie? You can have your ice cream, don't worry, it'll be right there. But just for 1 minute, tell me how you're feeling. And then you kind of, oh, I looked again and he hadn't texted me, or something happened that actually initiated this. And then what tends to happen if you give that place love and inquiry and being withness, you might still want the ice cream, but you might want less. That's the message I get repeatedly. It's like, yeah, normally I would finish half a bottle of wine after getting into it with my significant other, but when I sat and just gave myself a couple of minutes there. And that might become more than a couple of minutes over time, but just let it be easy in the beginning. I'm just like, what's really going on, sweetie? Then it might become a glass of wine or half a glass of wine. And that's very different than I got to discipline myself. I can't have ice cream. I can't have wine. I can't scroll on my phone, bad and shame. And that's very different from what you really want right now is love. I'm going to give you some love.
Yeah, that's such a huge mindset change, really. That's what it comes down to. I love that. That's amazing, Maria. It seems to me too that it would take time to get to that place where questioning instead of grabbing the ice cream or the wine or whatever, because that's easy. It's easier to do that and go down that, the numbing out,
Absolutely.
checking out, lashing out. So, I mean, people need to know in this fast, we want everything happening right now, fix it. This is something that takes time.
I started doing the first kind of body scan meditations and had that message given to me about how I project out what lays and knots of pain within. I started doing that when I was in my late teens and I just turned 55 and I never stopped working on it in one way or the other over those years. So yes, it does take time, but it's not like suddenly you wake up. Well, I guess there are teachers that wake up fully enlightened and then they never have to deal with it again. That's just not my experience, but it's an experience of ever increasing self-love, but also what I think is unique in my book is divine love. Like we have, this is from the yogic perspective, but the Christian perspective as well, the kingdom lies within. Be still and know that I am, that the love of God is within us, and that that love is accessible. If we contract and go into these out modes, we're not accessing that to the degree that we could. And if instead we say, oh God, please help me. My heart hurts so bad. Please be with me right now. Send your loving light deeply into my heart right now. In that moment, that prayer, and each chapter is preceded by a prayer, which I didn't have that in there initially. It's like, why am I not putting that in there when that is actually what made the difference to me? And it feels so personal what your faith is and how you articulate that. So I had put God, my publisher said, let's just put the divine. That's a little more generic. But whatever your faith is, if you have any, I would say even an atheist probably believes in love. So then say, Please, power of love, come and be with this place that is contracted within me now. And that is honestly when my own path to, and again, I don't even like to use the word mastering because I think that's arrogant and I don't think that you ever really master it in that way. But I do a lot less out than I've ever done in my life. And that is in part, I'm sure, because I started adding the prayerfulness to that work. I'm not alone right now. This is painful. And you could also think of it as your higher self is really with you, your light, your most adult self, your most divine self, w infinite self, whatever language you have can swoop in to the little girl in the crib that's all alone and woke up and doesn't feel loved and doesn't feel safe. And you can scoop her up in a very real way. And I often use hands in my groups and my classes. Hold it. I'm here. I've got you. I know this is scary. I'm right here. And I'm running two groups simultaneously right now. And one of them in particular, the women, they're all women in that particular group. And they keep saying, I feel so odd to say I love you. I'm here. And one is a nurse. I say that to people all day long, but I do not turn that energy toward myself. So I think there's also sort of a greater healing of the feminine, of women's role. Like we ooze love and compassion onto our families and many of the roles we take on as society. But how often do we actually turn that fully inward? That's not what we've been trained to do. So we're reversing something here. And that doesn't mean we can't still love fully and freely in all these roles that we might have, but it can never be at the expense of us. That has to stop. And it has been at the expense of us. The self-sacrificial woman is almost revered as, well, then you're a good woman if you put yourself last. And I mean, it sounds so trite, but I
That's
think
true.
there's really something here.
Yeah, and I found especially in midlife, women have, like you said, been giving to everybody else. And when you start focusing in on yourself, I myself too, it's very strange for me to say, well, I did a good job, or that was amazing what I just did. It's better now because I've been practicing it and doing it. But and that's what I want other women to know. You are amazing and you have done these beautiful things. Now it's your turn to take care of yourself.
And also understand that we have deep patterns that are generational and just like women before us, as far back as we can see, have had that pattern of needing validation from the outside and kind of a self-sacrificial role to some degree. So that's huge as well. And I teach people to become yoga teachers, and they're really up against that when they stand in front of a group to be fully, solidly in your ego. Well, isn't that egotistical? You know, am I not a little loud now? Am I being a boss, babe, or whatever? And it's like, no, fully embodying yourself is where the real power lies. And it's not even power. I don't know how to say it. It's a strength. It's a presence. It's a broadcast.
Like, I'm here. Like, here I am.
Right. Fully loving here, but not in a forceful way, because I think sometimes when we feel so contracted and pushed on and challenged and provoked, then it can come out as anger, rightfully so, you know, if we feel taken advantage of. But that's very different from just being fully in here. And if people listening to this take one thing away from this, scan your body with love every day. Imagine your body full of loving light every day. That alone will make a difference. It will shift how you broadcast and how you come across and how it feels to be you.
And you just said about how you're looking to others or the outside to validate what you are. And as I was reading your book, actually, I was thinking of a situation where I was looking for, okay, it's my husband, I'll just say it. I share stuff here. I need him to tell me, I look good. But then I kind of thought about it. I need to know these, not, that. So this is just fits in a little bit with that.
Absolutely. No, fits totally in with that. I think that is exactly it. And what you noticed it there. And I think that's also a huge step is to start to kind of witness. So, yes, we will stumble a million times and have the ice cream or the wine or lash out or, do all the outs. But the first step is to witness and notice that. It's like, wow, I'm actually wanting this validation from this other person. I'm trying to solicit it in this text or with these words. And then to sit, instead of like shaming or blaming that part of yourself, to say, where is that really coming from? And then it might be the little girl in the dress, and everybody was like, oh, you're so beautiful. I mean, this is what we say to little girls all the time. We comment on their looks all the time. We don't do that to little boys. I mean, I have just learn to zip it, and it's almost like the little girl expects it because she's already in the little dress, and you can tell that when she got that put on. And it's not to say that we can't love being beautiful, but it's when that is what we're looking to fill our cup with, and it's training from such a young age. So instead of feeling like, oh, there's something wrong with me because I want that validation. No, that's what I've been trained to do from before I could even think. Like, literally, before I was just a sponge and I saw my mom do that and I saw my grandmother do that. And to some degree, I probably taught my daughter to do that before I became conscious enough to not do that. So, we're turning a huge ship around collectively as women coming into our feminine power in a very new way, I would say.
I totally agree with that. So I love that you're doing this as well. I want to get into the topic of forgiveness because I've made little marks in my book and I realize the two that I have are both about forgiveness, which ties into this looking to other people for validation. I love you wrote that apology from someone else does not guarantee healing. So true healing relies on our own willingness to be present with the tension we feel when we're triggered. Talk about that a little bit. I think that's really important.
Well, so, again, kind of giving more of an example, if you have a trigger from the brother who bullied you when you were little, and you re-manifest that with a stand-in villain at work. There's someone who has the same energy as the brother and who can put me in that same place where I feel like I can't speak up in a meeting type of thing. That would be just a typical type of thing. So when you start to work with that trigger and you realize, well, this guy, and plus there's a guy at the gas station who makes me feel the same way, it all leads back to that feeling of being 5 years old. At some point, when I have sat with that and softened that enough, I'm able to release that original villain from projecting my anger onto them. And that doesn't mean they didn't do something wrong. And maybe the brother was six in this case, but it could have been a full adult that did something that really wasn't nice. Abuse, I mean, really traumatic things. But if I need that person to apologize to me for that to melt, then I'm again a victim, really. Then that person out there, and I think people around us and even we can feel when we hold that kind of power to give you what you seem to want from me or not give it. So when we start to sit with a contracted place inside, and it really does slowly melt and it does slowly soften, and you could think of the contraction in a trigger as a charge. It's like it's a contraction, it's a charge. And the harder that's coiled, the more of the lashing out will be. The more wine you need, the more ice cream you need, and the more you lash out with, the longer the texts are. And so you're kind of slowly softening that. And to where it becomes this little blip on the screen, and at some point it gets so soft that you might even be able to say, that really hurt when you said that. Ouch. I'm gonna just go for a walk and kind of work through that. I mean, so that's kind of the spectrum. But releasing the original villain and also the new villains, like the guy at work and the guy at the gas station who triggered that same place, it gives you the power back to be the one to heal it. And what can happen, not all the time, but sometimes it happens that when you soften the place inside that corresponds to a trigger that was, you could say, been put in place by a dynamic that's old and that's been repeated many times, that they show up differently. And actually, a very old coaching story comes to mind with a woman who did have a very strong reaction to her brother for some things that happened when they were quite young, and now she's in her 60s, and he was going to come to her daughter's wedding, and it was again flaring up. But as she sat with that original hurt, he actually showed up much softer than he normally would. So it's also, we start to actually recognize that any lack of forgiveness of projecting out onto others, it holds those dynamics in place. They kind of ping pong with each other. And when you could say, let go of your end of the rope becomes slack and the other person has nothing to pull on. They might try, and then, there's not an energetic resonance on your end with that. So forgiveness in that sense is setting yourself free energetically, but it does not mean that anyone who hurt anyone, that that was ever good or right. That's always not good. And I think there's a maturation of forgiveness. I think if we forgive too soon, it's almost a little violent toward ourselves. If there's really deep trauma, then to say, I forgive you, and maybe even have it flavored with it's okay, I'm okay. It's like, no, that really, really hurt and gave me a lot to work with, but I release you. So maybe in some ways you could say forgiveness is more along the lines of releasing than it is any kind of, it's okay what you did. I will say, when you start to work with forgiveness, and especially the softening of the triggers that you feel are attached to a certain other person, when your own area, and it's usually a specific chakra, starts to soften and open, you actually start to see the humanity in the other. And that, again, doesn't mean that it was okay that they used a very bad strategy to meet a need, but you get in touch with the need behind their strategy, which is woundedness in their own right. But you start to do your work under the hood, an inside job. There's just less and less and less drama and gossip and dynamics out there. It's a different way of relating to one another. And it's a different way of being friends. I don't know if you got that far in the book, but toward the very end, and that was actually toward the end of my own process that I put that in there. I called the chapter originally How to Be a Heal What Hurts Friend, and the editor suggested a new paradigm for friendship, which is great too. But what if you call me and you tell me what a jerk your brother is, or your husband, or whoever, for hurting you? That instead of me jumping in and agreeing what a jerk he is, and you should maybe divorce him, and why are you even with him, and whatever, the way we can kind of go at it, like, I just reinforce the reactivity you're already in. What if I said, oh my God, Kim, that must really hurt. Ouch. Let's just sit here together for a moment. Where do you feel that in? Where's that showing up in your body? I know if it were me, it's my heart. Yeah. Wow. It's my stomach. Can we just sit here together for a moment? And we'll just imagine light in your heart, in your stomach, together. And then what would likely happen is you would cry instead of spewing all this energy about the impending divorce. I mean, there is no impending divorce, but I'm just playing around here.
No, but the energy is different.
The energy is very different. I'm addressing the contraction in your body, and I'm willing to be with you because it's very, very vulnerable to go into that contraction in the body. That's when we feel like defenseless 5-year-olds. And who wants to feel like a defenseless 5-year-old when you're 55? Well, I do actually, but that took me a long time because I trust myself and God enough that my 5-year-old is safe between me and the divine. We are all this 5-year-old needs. And the 5-year-old can relax in our arms, so to speak.
I think too, in a lot of ways, we need that 5-year-old to come back to us. We need to have that playful, childlike energy.
Yes. Right. Yeah, it says in the Bible somewhere, be like the little children. And I think there is that spontaneous, playful, and that kind of running up in the playground, want to play with me, And before we start to kind of have all these kind of masks and density around the hurt places, right? And
Right.
you know how quickly our kids move into various forms of numbing out, really. Oh, you got hurt, you can watch a cartoon. Oh, you got hurt, you can have a popsicle. We do it, right? And but having empathy with that need to numb out, I think, is super important so that we don't shame ourselves for that. But there is something greater than the numbing agent, whatever that is, and it's love. It's loving presence. And there's never been less presence in the world, if you ask me. It seems like you go to the grocery store and it's just like we're zombies that just run around and get what we need and run out of there. You know, there's not very little. Hey, how are you doing today? Oh, you're getting that. What are you going to make? You know, a lot of that has disappeared.
It really has, and I don't know if that's because of COVID and all that, we have to stay away from each other, or if it was before that. I really try and make an effort when I go to the store, especially this time of the year, to just smile at somebody. You know, just that little act might
You're
open up a
right.
little bit, you know?
Absolutely.
So, oh my gosh, so many good messages here, Maria. So I love how you went into all the breathing and the being in your body. And do you want to just maybe cover the next steps a little bit before we kind of are done here?
Yes, absolutely. So when you've become more grounded in your body and more aware of your breath, and maybe you're already there where you'll start to notice, okay, something just happened. My heart has is aching now. I'm going to go sit with this and be with this. Now, if there's sort of a step before that that can be very good to take, because we tend to get into it with people in our, you know, close circles, right? So if somebody's doing something and you have a reaction to it, one of the steps is to separate out your story about the action, what it means, and what actually happened. And that tends to get a little blurred. So instead of immediately jumping into what that means, like, well, exactly what happened, the person texted me an hour later instead of 5 minutes later. That's all that happened. In my mind, he doesn't love me, he doesn't care about me, you know, I don't matter. I mean, this is like such a classic, right? So when you can go in and say, okay, we're going to separate out, and the little exercise for this is in the book, so it's a little easier when you have the book in front of you, but you separate it out. He texted me a 4:55 instead of a 4:05, and he said, I'll be home at 6. He doesn't love me, he doesn't care about me, was wrapped into that story. Now I'm separating that out as my feeling and reaction, the story I'm creating about it. Now there's methods there that would have you just go in and say, hey, you know, is that really true? So you're working on the mind level. Is that really true? Let's get some examples here of how that's not really true and convince myself in the mind that I'm just overreacting. Now, what I would have you do is say, okay, when I believe that story, if you believe that story, he doesn't love me, he doesn't care about me, go into the body, feel your breath. And now I'm going to poke at you with that story. He doesn't love you. He doesn't care about you. He doesn't love you. He doesn't care about you. And eventually you'll feel a place in the body that will contract. Okay, now you don't need that story anymore. That was just a messenger to show you what this was. So now instead you can go in and hold this place and sit with it. And sometimes the holding and sitting with it is just that, like a scared child coming home from kindergarten after a bad day just needs to be scooped up and sit in mama's lap. And then we'll, oh, I'm ready. I'll go run, play now. Other times that little kid might have something to tell you that didn't want to play with me. I was the only one who didn't get picked or chosen. So they were all playing and I was sitting on the bench. And then the teacher scolded me for something. So now I'm there. Oh, that would have felt so lonely. I'm so sorry. I'm right here. I love you. I've got you. And then that can start to soften. Now, if you come back out after you've been with the place that contracted in the face of your own words, and now you read the text again, all of a sudden, I guarantee you that's going to be a lot less upsetting. Okay. And the story will be a lot less upsetting. Maybe the story will be, and you might not know the truth yet, but it could be, well, I mean, the guy could have been in the middle of something, may not have looked at their phone. There's all kinds of other possibilities. But even if the guy literally just didn't think it was important enough to answer for a whole hour, you're going to feel a lot better about it because it's going to feel a lot less like he doesn't love me, he doesn't care about me, because it's not tied into that story that lives in the body. So that's kind of how the steps go, that you actually use the current circumstances, the current hurts, to locate where it is in the body. So instead of, this is a tall order, this took me a while, but instead of being afraid to be triggered, you start to look forward to being triggered because it's an opportunity for healing. It's like, so instead of being upset that, oh no, I discovered I have a sliver here that's infected in my hand, I wish I hadn't noticed that. Now it's like, wow, I'm so glad I bumped that up against the corner of the table, even though it hurt, because now I can address it. I'm going to tend to it, make sure it heals. Right? So if we can think about triggers as that, it's like, wow, here is a part of me crying for love. And I have the capacity, and even when I think I don't, I can call on the divine that is in the center of my being to bring to this place within me that needs love. And then it's like loving knot by knot by knot by knot, softening. And I promise you, your body will get healthier, you will get lighter, things will flow much more smoothly, and the triggers will get less and less. In my opinion, if you don't do this love work, they get worse. It's like they contract more over time, and the numbing agents stop working. So instead of, I used to just be able to have a glass of wine and then it was fine. Now I need two, now I need three, now I need a bottle, now I need a gallon of ice cream. The outs tend to intensify. You know, when we get to our age, they will start to cripple us physically, in my opinion and experience with my own body. And I'm still going through layers of that. I've just gone through kind of a gastrointestinal thing that I had to address. And the layers of that, it's never just physical. There is emotional, old childhood stuff like in my intestines. And there is permeability in my intestines that I've had to address. And it's like, wow, that's the permeability that I have in my boundaries. And so it's always loving presence that continues to shield me. Also from overgiving and all the things that we talked about that women do. The good news is we have the medicine inside of us, the loving presence medicine. We are capable of that, and the loving light of God is within us. Like, I feel that so strongly that I feel like I can say it as a fact, and we can bring that to the places that hurt. And it's actually not that difficult. It's really not rocket science. You might need a little help and, get my book. That will definitely be a good start. The bad news is, if we don't do that loving work, we keep repeating the very dynamics that hurt us. And if we divorce that guy that's doing the thing that reminds of our dad, then we'll go on a dating site and we'll pick the exact person who will also do that. You might not notice for 3 months, but then it'll become clear. And that I've seen over and over in my own life and clients' life, that the inner pattern that's being projected out and becomes our reality, that can only change in here.
That's a big lesson for all of us. Almost everything I talk about, we have to go inside and take care of what we need, and then that will branch out.
Yes, so true, Kim.
Oh, when you were talking about how it's a kind of a knot, what it reminded me of, I don't know if you crochet or knit or anything, but I've been crocheting and I had a skein of yarn that I needed to untangle. And it took me 2 nights to do this. But as
So
it
true.
was
I love that.
so,
No, I really, really think that is such a good analogy, Kim. And when I have worked with specifically my solar plexus chakra with all this digestive stuff, it literally felt like there was something that was kind of balled up, kind of similar to what you're saying. And spontaneously one night, this is not in the book because I just came up with this, but it really helped me, so I'll give it to you now. I started creating kind of a spiraling movement with my hand, visualizing that loving heart light was coming out of my hand, and I was kind of aiming that at that knot in my solar plexus. And as I just kept doing that with such love intention, it started to kind of loosen and untangle. And Yeah, no, that's, and the other thing that comes to mind when you say that, I had very long hair as a kid, and so did my sister, and my dad was the patient one who would brush our hair after we had had our hair washed. There was no conditioner in the 70s in Denmark, so it was like an ordeal. But if he came upon a knot, he would just sit very, very patiently and pick them apart, whereas my mom would just try to brush through it. But it's, yes, so it is that.
Yeah.
It's love, it's patience, it's kindness, it's all the things that love really is, that we
Yeah.
apply to it, the holding, the kindness,
And time.
time, patience, right? Love is patient, love is kind.
Yes, for sure. Oh my goodness, Maria. I feel like we should just keep talking about this. Where would you like people to go to find you still?
Website mariatoso.com and go into the section that's called Heal What Hurts. And there are the options kind of for how you could work with me. I think the first and easiest would be to get the book or give the book to someone. It's a really good guide. It really gets you started on a lot of what we've talked about today. And then I also have groups that meet once a week for 6 weeks, and they're kind of ongoing. And that's
Okay.
this intimate, very kind of cozy, confidential container of people that are willing to work with these things and have the field of presence that you create together, and also my guidance. And then there's also one-on-one. If you really want to dive in there, I can definitely help you get in and do the process that I described today
Sure.
with you. And then just yesterday, I started composing like a mini, mini guide for how to do the Heal What Hurts meditation on your own. So that's going to be ready like very soon, as like just a freebie where you can just sit and do this in your own body.
Oh, nice. Do you record the meditations for people?
I also have the meditation, the Heal What Hurts meditation specifically.
Okay.
And yes, I actually have versions of that meditation available on the meditations in there. It can't be the exact ones because, you know, that belongs to the publisher, but, you know, it's
Okay.
versions of it, the breath and the body. And you want to go to the resource library on my website. I should have mentioned that.
Okay.
And it's free, and you can go in there and find the meditations that correspond. So,
Sure.
but I will say what I really recommend, and I don't know if people are doing this, but I say it in the book too. The meditations in the book, if you record them on a voice memo and hear yourself talk to yourself, I mean, some people don't like to hear their own voice, and then that's not a good idea.
Yeah.
But we are trying to create this relationship where my voice, my soothing meditation voice, is here to hold and soothe the wounded
Right.
me. So if you have those meditations ready with your own voice, so next time
Yeah.
you're upset, you listen to that coach part of yourself speak to
Right.
the wounded part of yourself. I've had some really, really powerful experiences listening to my own meditations
Yeah.
and really feel like I am both the coach, illuminated, wise Maria, and the wounded, sad, lonely, I'm not loved, I don't belong Maria. And the two can come together in
Sure.
that way. But then again, I've also heard people give me feedback on the book where they just read the meditations and they read a couple lines, close their eyes, read a couple lines and close their eyes, and have a
Yeah.
profound experience that way.
Yeah, that's kind of what I did. I just had to read through them and just take my
Yeah.
time through them. So very
Right.
cool.
That seems to work.
Yeah, very nice. So I guess we have to say goodbye. So
Okay.
before we do, is there any one last little message you want to give our listeners?
Well, you know, inspired by you, Kim, before you walk into any family settings during the holiday season, visualize them and send them love from your heart. And if any kind of contraction or knot arises in your body when you do that, be with that and send it love and send it softening. I'm here. And visualize the space you'll be in with your family as full of light. I think this is extremely powerful. I have that as an example in the book in there, where I was walking into a function and I was afraid to be judged. It was shortly after my divorce, and I had all these ideas about how I was not going to be welcome or loved, safe, belonging, right? So I sat in my car and sent love ahead of me into the space, and I felt it, and I prayed about it, and I sat with it. And then I walked in, and I don't know that I've ever gotten so many hugs in my life.
Oh my gosh.
And then, of course, the question is, would I have gotten all those hugs if I had walked in with the story and the expectation that I'm not loved, I'm not safe, I don't belong? What would
Right.
my energy have been?
Right.
Would it have invited hugs, or would I have walled off?
Yeah. But
That
you.
would be maybe the one to take, like
Yeah.
send that ahead to whoever you're going to spend it
Yeah.
with. And if you're not spending the holidays with other people and you're by yourself, which is also the case for a lot of people, and there is more loneliness and isolation since COVID for sure, this too shall pass. Maybe this is a time to really go inward and to really be with everything that's in the body, love on yourself, light a candle in your own space, sit with what hurts and hold it and love it, and let it be like a meditation cave where you use that time not to numb out of being alone, but it's like, I am here, I'm willing to be in this meditation, loving, prayerful space with myself, and that from inside out, that might transform the world around you.
Yeah, that energy you put out will come back to you.
Yeah.
Love it. Well, Maria, thank you so much for joining me today. I know there was a lot in here, and listeners, grab her book. You will love it. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Midlife with Courage. If you liked what you heard, I would love it if you would leave a review. Or even better, send a link of this episode to a friend. Until next time, take care of your beautiful self.